Got a question for you.
All right, shoot.
What do you get if you saw a Boeing 747 perfectly in two?
What?
Demiplanes.
And with that, here are six unique demiplanes for you to use in your next game.
That's how we roll. 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 That's how we roll.
Welcome to the Goblins Corner. My name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
And tonight,
talking about demiplanes.
Yeah, specifically, we're talking about some custom demiplanes that we have created for you to use in your campaign of choice.
Indeed.
And we're going to talk a little bit about demiplanes as well, but we're not going to dive too much into the lore of that.
Because there's a whole lot of types.
Yeah, and that's definitely something for another episode. This is more of a fun episode where we come up with some ridiculous demiplanes for you to use.
Indeed.
And so we have six that we've come up with. But before we jump into any of that, if you haven't yet, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. Help us get our show out to more people. Get notified when more awesome episodes come your way.
Indeed.
And if you don't, why aren't you?
Yeah, we'd appreciate it.
Yeah, do it for us. So you might ask yourself, what's a demiplane, Matt?
A demiplane, let me get my definitional voice on. A demiplane is an extra-dimensional space that has its own rules of operation and finite borders. Some spells create smaller, specifically limited demiplanes, such as Mordenkainen's Magnificent Mansion, or the demiplane spell.
And it should be noted, finite plane, right?
Yes.
This isn't infinite like the typical planes. This is sometimes it's as big as a box. Sometimes it's as big as a continent.
House. Yeah.
I mean, demiplane of dread's pretty big.
Indeed. In this case, we are referring to demiplanes created by powerful entities or springing into being to answer some whim or need of the multiverse.
And in this case, several of our demiplanes are definitely by whim. But they all have great story and lore as well to them.
Sure.
Now, most demiplanes are spawned from the ethereal plane, at least traditionally it was.
Sure.
But in theory, you could have demiplanes come from any plane. And in fact, 5th edition has changed it up a little bit. Ravenloft used to be from the ethereal plane, and now it's part of the Shadowfell.
Yep.
And that's totally fine, right? Fits thematically.
Yeah.
Very delightful. Let's mention a couple of famous demiplanes since we're talking about demiplanes. What are a couple that we've written down?
The Living Plane of Neth.
Yeah. Go look that up. It's pretty interesting.
It's weird. It's interesting.
It is very. Yeah. It's a living plane. You're inside it. It's kind of cool. Of course, we mentioned Ravenloft, demiplane of dread.
There's a demiplane of time itself.
Yeah, the time plane. Found a lot of police call boxes in it.
The mazes that the Lady of Pain creates are technically all individual demiplanes.
Yeah, and Sigil. Yeah, absolutely. Inside the Astral Dreadnought is definitely a plane.
Yeah, their belly is a demiplane. It is not a physical thing.
From which none escape. And shouldn't, really. If you get swallowed by an Astral Dreadnought, just go make another character.
Sure.
That's a great... Bronze your current character sheet. Set it on the wall. My character got to play and fight an Astral Dreadnought, which was the last time you actually saw one in a campaign, Matt?
Oh.
Yeah, what version?
I saw one in 3.5.
Okay, all right. That's not too bad. That's only, what, 10, 12 years ago at least?
Look, details, words. Yeah. The Observatorium.
Mm-hmm. Gaze upon the rest of the multiverse and go mad.
Yeah.
Imprisonment spells are demiplanes on their own.
Yep. And once again, that depends on your version. We're aware. The City of Sigil itself, or Sigil, if you're from there.
That's true. Yeah, it depends on whether you're a clueless Burke or whatnot. So those are a lot of fun. And of course, there's a whole list of other demiplanes that third-party creators have come up with, books have come up with, but those are just some fun examples. Look up some demiplanes online. Look them up in your favorite book.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fun ones. We obviously have experimented with some as well.
Sure.
And tonight, as I mentioned, we have six. And Matt, we've got a doozy right off the bat.
We're going to start off with the Plane of Lost Items. Tell me what you got on here.
The Demiplane of Lost Items stores all items in the multiverse that are slated by time and fate never to be found again. These can be items of import in some way or another, or just regular items that tend to be easily lost, like ballpoint pens.
Sure.
I can never find a Sharpie marker when I really want one.
I always have ballpoint pens, but Sharpie markers, man, those things
just
gone. Evaporate.
Lost to the multiverse. They're in the demiplane of lost items. There is no rhyme or reason how an item disappears into the plane of lost items. Some say it is the will of a petty god.
Surely.
Others say micropockets of instability in reality cause tiny holes for these objects to slip through.
That sounds very gnomish.
That is a gnomish contraption, isn't it? Yeah. Someone with a chalkboard came up with that reason. Childhood toys, an especially soft pair of socks, the earring from a loved one, that homework assignment, all things can be found here. And if you're especially unlucky, you too may become lost as well.
Yeah, I guess if you get lost, sure.
And I got a reason behind all of that too.
All right. Tell me about it.
Many scholars believe it's not just the location, but also memory, which increases the chance for an object or person to enter the plane of lost items, specifically the lack thereof. The further removed something is from the collective memory of others or reality in general, the greater the chance it may have to slip away from reality and wind up inside the plane of lost items. Now, some say other scholars have calculated how to escape this fate, but their works are exceedingly boring and have since been forgotten and mysteriously lost. I wonder where they went.
Sure. The petty god is like, not, not, not.
Yep.
Give me that. What are the characteristics of the plane of lost items?
Well, it has standard gravity. It is finite, although seemingly infinite in size because no one's ever found the edges because they've gotten lost before they did.
Sure.
Normal time, alterable morphic, which means you can alter it normally, and then normal magic with the following exception. No extra-dimensional spaces can be created or accessed within this realm. Can't open up that bag of holding.
That's a shame.
It is a shame. Yeah. Too bad.
You can't just dive in there and just start chucking.
That is what it is, right?
Legendary artifacts into your bag of holding and then dive out.
You gotta have somebody strong to carry all that stuff with you. Although getting out, well, we'll talk about getting in and out. That tends to be a problem as well.
I see. So, speaking of which, how do you get there?
There is a planar key, which is a sock, which its pair has been lost. The sock is magically compelled to be reunited with its lost twin.
Sure.
So you need to find a sock that's only got one pair. Scholars believe washrooms are the best place to find active portals to the plane of lost items.
Sure. Lots of things get lost. Socks. Forgetting change in your pockets. Yeah, all that sort of stuff.
All that change is, that's another thing that there's a mountain of loose change in the plane of lost items.
Oh, yeah.
Now, in order to leave the plane of lost items, one must currently be remembered by a living creature. Reality has to remember that you exist or you don't go back.
Okay.
Which means if you're a character that doesn't have a history, no one remembers you, you better find someone to talk to before you jump into this plane or you're not coming back.
Sending. Sending is the spell that you want. If you don't have sending, don't come here.
Yeah.
Tell me about the inhabitants of this place.
Any creature which hoards or collects may inevitably find its way here to the plane of lost items. And so, ethereal filchers, dragons, neogi, dwarves, sphinxes, and all others can make domains here.
Makes sense. Anybody that
collects stuff, right?
Yeah.
And this is just a couple of examples. Additionally, treasure hunters are attracted to this realm for good reason.
Yeah.
And may be found roaming the detritus wastes, looking for loose change.
Find the dragon.
The dragon's got all the loose change.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's got a big mountain of it, man. Finally, those that are forgotten make their home here, and this can range from sad scholars to powerful demigods, so travelers must navigate with great care at all times. And note, you can maybe have those lost to oubliettes. These could also be vestiges. Maybe this is where vestiges come from.
Yeah.
Or even imprisonment spells could transfer you into the demiplane of lost items.
Sure, because realistically, if you get imprisoned,
you're forgotten by society.
You're what? One, maybe two generations out from society never really knowing you. I mean, unless you were super famous.
You get stuck in that oubliette for too long. The rest of the world forgets you. You get popped into an imprisonment spell and they erase all version of your history.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you get sucked out.
Little Finder Wyvern Spur action there.
Yeah, man.
So, are there any special locations or anything of interest there?
Well, we have Sock Mountain.
Sure.
It's a big pile of socks.
Yeah, man.
A sea of ballpoint pins. The key mines, where the dwarves mine veins of metal keys. Important items. There's a city of important items, in fact, ruled by a great collector.
Okay.
which might look like Del Toro.
Sure. Now, I can see that, like, the odds that all of the super powerful things might end up specifically being gathered by one of these demigods or a dragon or something like that really makes sense.
And I also say the Forgotten Lands are another key opponent. So imagine entire land being forgotten.
Like
the land that time forgot?
Well, sure. What I was thinking was Ravenloft pulls, you know, areas out of the prime material plane that get too steeped in dread. This is places that literally have been forgotten to their worlds and just get sucked in.
Yes.
Maybe that's why this place is so big.
Got a lot of flavor to it, right?
Yeah.
Now, speaking of flavor, your next demiplane is all about flavor.
Indeed.
So talk to me about the City of Celebration. This is a cool demiplane, and I think we definitely should incorporate this at some point.
Well, this large circular city is separated into 5 wards, one for each season, quartering the city, and a central ward where the administration of the city takes place.
So it's pieces of a pie, and then a center, a juicy nugget center.
Yeah, sure.
It's the caramel part, right? Or the peanut, if you like Snickers.
Sure, man.
I don't know. I want a candy bar right now, and I can't understand why.
That's fair. Each quarter of the city celebrates festivals and events specific to its season, with specific festivities occurring block by block. The architecture of any given block reflects the origin of the celebration. Some blocks are warded for specific types of creatures if their celebrations represent a danger to others.
So if I'm the Afridi celebration of fire chucking, then...
Yeah.
They might ward that for anyone that's not immune to fire.
Like on the summer solstice, right, which is the longest day of the year, if the Afridis have a great fire celebration, if you're not immune or at the very least resistant to fire, you may not be allowed on that block for the moment.
It'd be the, you know, the Salhagen celebration of sacrificing creatures to Sokola. That's every day. The Uncola.
So, we're going to get into that a little bit, but there's none of that.
Okay, so it's only mostly good,
right?
Good celebrations.
It can be neutral also, but nothing that endangers the residents of the city specifically.
Okay. Talk to me about the characteristics here. What do we got? Gravity and such.
Okay. It's standard gravity. It is a finite size. It's a city size, right?
Yeah.
It's a very large city, but it's a city. The weather is by ward.
Okay. So right. Regardless of where you're at.
Exactly. The spring ward is springtime. The winter
ward is wintertime.
Right.
That makes sense.
It is alterable morphic, which, as we described, is you can affect things normally. It is mildly good, hence the...
No sacrificing to Sokola.
Right.
Okay. That's fine.
Also, things like...
But you can sacrifice to Sepepsi.
Absolutely not. No. But you can sacrifice to Lord Coffee.
There you go. Lord Coffee. I'm fine with that. Maybe Lord Cheddar.
Sure. There are certain things that you might would think of. Like, most people think fairies are good and friendly and happy. The Wild Hunt does not happen in this city. It is a fairy festival, but it doesn't happen here.
Because you hunt people down.
Yes.
That's nothing good about that.
No.
That's why they're whimsical, not good.
Exactly.
I mean, I know that The Witch Behind the Wildlight is all like about happy-go-lucky stuff, but...
Kind of.
Go read some mythology, guys. It ain't always that great. Wind up in a toadstool ring, end up in somebody's stew.
Yep.
Or aged 100 years.
Yes.
So how do you get to the City of Celebration?
You can stumble through any of the temporary portals whilst in high spirits. Generally drunk.
So you can wander in while you're hammered?
Yes.
I love that. That's great.
Also, you can be invited. Now, that's usually due to feats of outstanding celebration or as a solution to a problem for the city. If you and your party just go on an absolutely reckless, like, month-long bender and, you know, drink the entire town out of ale and all of that stuff, you know what? You might wake up one day with a big envelope sitting in the middle of your pile of bodies.
You are cordially invited to wreak havoc in our city now.
Exactly.
I love that idea. That's great.
In a city which never runs out of booze.
Hmm.
Now, you can leave the city anytime you want through clearly marked portals that return you to the place from which you came.
You just want to say, I'm heading out. See you guys later. And
I'm done.
And you bounce.
Too much. I need to sober up.
I'm going to have the massive hangover. It's going to last 3 months. What kind of inhabitants? I'm assuming partygoers inhabit this plane.
Indeed. A nearly endless variety of creatures, as long as they have a celebration that can be enjoyed without violence or danger being spread to other parts of the city. So, literally, you could have, obviously, humans have celebrations, right? Elves have celebrations. But even evil, quote-unquote, races, if they have a celebration...
And it's not dangerous.
That is not dangerous.
You're not sacrificing anybody to some sort of, you know, soda product.
Right. Then you're allowed to be. You'll have some little block.
This would be kind of fun to add a whole bunch of variety into a campaign or a wonderful one-shot or multi-shot.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What kind of locations do you have in the City of Celebration?
Well, as we know, block by block is individual celebrations for different creatures. So each one of those is going to be its own flavor. Other than that, the central building of the city is City Hall. If you have been contracted to solve a problem for the city, that is where you'll be going first. And it's just a large circular building that is relatively plain for a city of this type. That's it. It's just a place you go to find out what the job they need solving is.
And I would say as a DM, city blocks can change according to what you're doing, right?
Absolutely.
Or according to your storyline and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the City of Celebration. Very nice.
Talk to me about the training room.
Ah, the training room. This demiplane exists to help prepare and train creatures for combat, combative environments, and other tactical challenges. Think the X-Men's Danger Room.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Or, Tank, I'm going to need some weapons in the Matrix, and just comes out. It's exactly what I'm thinking with this. The training room starts as a bare white room devoid of any object at all and seemingly to extend onto forever. But should you actually like wander off, it only is about 2,000 feet and it loops back on itself.
Oh, nice.
Upon entering the demiplane, a disembodied voice asked the characters how they would like to train, inquiring about environment, weaponry, traps, assailants, even conditions such as gravity or atmosphere.
Nice.
Once selected, the character can suit up, gear up, and fight whatever simulation they desire, continuing combat as long as they would like and ending it whenever they wish. Train as long as you want, right? You train for a day? Cool. You want to train for an hour? Also fine. All created objects and conditions feel and appear real, and scholars are uncertain if they actually are real or just really impressive illusions created by the entity that runs the training room. Little philosophical question: when you're killing orcs in the training room, are they really orcs summoned from someplace else? Nobody knows. They look real.
So,
but everything disappears when you leave the training room. So, is it real?
You're getting metaphysical there, because then you have to ask, what is real? Because if the sentience in the training room is all powerful in its dimension, yes, it could absolutely make a real orc. But if it was immediately created and then immediately assaulted and killed, I mean, it's technically real.
I make these moral quandaries for other DMs to thrust upon their characters. And so this is a perfect example of how much do you want to torture your players?
Sure.
You may just have people who want to murder hobo, use it as illusion, right?
Yeah.
You want to really test the paladin's faith? Ask this question.
Yeah.
While its primary purpose is training others to fight, this can also be altered to anything considered a challenge, quote-unquote. So a chess match might be a challenge. That's a type of battle, right?
Yeah.
Could be a high-stakes game of poker, right?
Absolutely.
Maybe even an eating or drinking contest.
Nice.
No one is quite sure who created the training room, but some thoughts are, and these are just some examples, long-forgotten god of war.
Makes sense.
A long-dead race which is at war with another. They used it to like train, fight something. Githyanki could have created this. Be a great place for Githyanki, war wizards, and so forth.
What are the characteristics of the training room?
Well, it is self-contained. It is sentient morphic, which means it is controlled by the entity that controls the training room.
Mm-hmm.
Normal time and gravity or magic. Now, this is at whim of the voice because you can set all the qualities, but at default, it's normal everything.
Gotcha.
It is mildly positive dominant unless otherwise specified. So you have to turn that part off.
Okay.
And the reason is as the primary nature of the training room is to train for combat, the default setting is to enable rapid healing. Should a character perish while in the training room, it is instantly revived to one hit point, regardless of the state of damage it has taken. Again, subject to setup. You can turn it off if you want, but then you're dead.
Right.
And so it's, or let's say you're undead and you go to the training room, then you don't want it to be mildly
positive.
You want it to be negative, right? So again, now there's a caveat with, in terms of like entering the training room. Upon entering the training room, any objects, magical or otherwise, are absorbed into the individual's body and may not be retrieved until leaving the plane. So all your cool magic gear is part of you until you leave.
Sure.
Doesn't matter what it is. You cannot, like, you arrive with nothing. Characters who arrive always show up clothed in a fine white cotton robe. I'm thinking...
like a spa robe?
Yeah, yeah, from a hotel.
Nice.
That's exactly. Yeah, they just kind of show up like that. Maybe some slippers, I'd be fine with that
sure.
as well. And of course, they can ask for whatever objects or gear they want to fit themselves for training. Because all you have to do is say, I'd like a suit of armor. Here's the specifications. I want a magic object.
Yeah.
You can ask for that.
I'm going to need my spell book.
Yeah, I want my spell book. Here are the spells that it has in it.
Yep.
List it out.
How do you get to go there?
There are several portals to get to the training room. Several exist in Valhalla, and there are also planar keys, and all of them tend to be weapons of some sort. So an axe, perhaps?
Sure.
Maybe a really sharp dagger. The portal remains open for two rounds. Should others wish to enter the training room, they can. If they want to enter by reopening the portal, though, they find themselves alone and in a different instance and cannot join the others who originally entered in. Exiting the plane is as simple as willing it.
Gotcha. You'd
say, I'm done, and you... pop back into reality.
So if you don't all go in together,
then it
somebody can't catch up with you.
It just gears up an extra instance.
Nice.
Which is kind of neat. So if you're escaping to go to the training room to train up from an assailant, they can't just immediately join you.
Nice.
Got to keep them out for two rounds.
Very cool. Does it have any inhabitants?
Anything and everything, but most certainly the people training are the inhabitants. Everything else is subject to the whim of the training room. So if you say, I want it to be populated by the following creatures, then that's what happens.
Sure.
In terms of locations, there are none. It is a training room
right.
that creates its own reality. The room itself creates up to 2,000 square feet of environment. 2,000 by 2,000.
Sure.
That's more than 2,000 square feet.
Oh, see, when you said it looped back in on itself, like I got the Muppet physics. Like where they walk off the left side of the screen and come back on the right side.
This little 2D action going on there. Yeah. It's pretty much, you can keep walking and you wind up back in the same place you were.
Nice. Okay.
Now, should the training room or the simulation require more room, clever twists and turns are created, as well as it updates the environment on the fly to simulate larger areas. So if you're flying and you keep moving forward, you're going to eventually loop back, but it just removes behind you and recreates what is in front of you.
Sure.
But that also means that if you teleport more than 2,000 square feet, then you're not going anywhere.
Right.
But it looks like you've went someplace. There's a lot of fun cartoon physics with that.
I love the fact that if you teleport, you just basically sit still because you've gone so far over and over and
but
over again.
But it feels
again.
So real, Matt. Now, we were talking about philosophical questions before, right? If I teleport 2,000 feet
mm-hmm.
or 3,000 feet, do I really move? What if? How do you know that it's 2,000 feet wide?
So the funny thing here is if you teleport 3,000 feet, you don't move. Right? Because
you're in the center of everything.
You're in the center of everything.
You're literally in the center of the universe. And of course.
Of that universe.
Now, if you make a portal into the training room, like from one portal to the next, maybe you're simulating a multiversal jumping point. What actually is real?
What happens if two people go in and walk in opposite directions?
A lot of questions with that. Yeah. And I leave the DMs to figure that out because I don't care.
Right.
Speaking of portals and all sorts of things like that, we've got...
a question of the week.
And I believe it is dimensional related, Matt.
It is indeed.
Tell me about this.
What is the portal and portal key to your personal demiplane?
My portal and portal key. I believe the portal key would be a Godzilla figurine of some sort.
Okay.
It's only appropriate. My portal is definitely grandiose. I'm thinking something with chill lights on it.
Okay. Okay.
I don't think it would be a regular door, though. I'm kind of going for like one of the vault circular doors that you kind of, you got to kind of twist that little gear and then flip it and it opens up with a loud creaking.
Sure.
Maybe even with a clack on bell.
Nice.
That'd be a nice portal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let everybody know from miles around that you've opened the portal to my domain.
For weal or woe.
I would also accept a portal which looks like the face from Castle Grayskull.
Okay.
Which kind of the jaw just sure. kind of falls down and you see, and there's the portal for that. That'd also be delightful and ridiculous.
Sure.
What would your portal and portal key be for your personal domain?
Now, mine's a little more accessible than yours. Mine is any cafe door that isn't Starbucks.
Okay.
Right. You can access my demiplane from any cafe door that isn't Starbucks. The portal key, however, requires you to have a black backpack that has at least one notebook, at least one pen, coffee,
mm-hmm.
because you can't come in if you don't have.
No, you shouldn't.
Right? And so as long as you've got all of the things in the backpack and you go through the cafe door, you pop in.
I'm surprised a shot of rum is not part of the portal key as well.
Now, as discussed, we have...
You have a fully stocked bar, so why would exactly. you? Yeah, no, I get that. That makes sense. Yeah. What is your portal key and the portal that you happen to have for your personal domain? Let us know at Goblins Corner on Twitter or hit us up in the comments below.
Yeah, I'd love to know. That, to me, that's an interesting question about like where people's heads are at.
That's nothing but flavor.
Yep.
Lots of flavor, much like what you don't see at Starbucks. All right. Matt, you've got another... awesome demiplane, and this is somewhat war-related as well.
It is.
But in a different kind of flavor. I'm talking about flavor here.
Indeed.
Talk to me about the Colosseum. What is the Colosseum?
All right. Well, the description of the Colosseum is a little different than our other demiplanes. There's no standard version of the Colosseum because every bout changes the structure to suit the needs of the competition that's going on. A fight in the jungle may see the structure take the form of ancient ruins surrounding an area of combat. But if you've got a naval battle going on, that's not going to make a lot of sense.
I would assume there's going to always be stadium seats, though, around it at some point. Yeah.
Generally thematically appropriate to whatever's going on, but yes.
Okay. All right. I could see that. That's cool. So it is a sort of Colosseum-esque building,
yes,
as a demiplane that changes according to whatever fight you're doing.
Precisely.
That makes sense. What kind of characteristics do we have?
It is purely divinely morphic.
That's it?
Yep. The gravity can change based off of the whim of whatever war god or competition god is running the place at the time, because you want to be able to have different types of competitions. So, yeah, it's not necessarily standard time. It's not necessarily standard gravity. None of it.
And I'm assuming different deities can control the Colosseum.
Indeed.
So if I've got Tempest,
mm-hmm.
my Colosseum might just be an open battlefield.
Right. It absolutely could look like a standard Colosseum.
Or like a gladiatorial Colosseum, like a Romanesque type thing. Whereas if it's, what's the god of naval combat in Forgotten Realms?
Valcor.
So it might be a large pond or whatnot. Maybe people are standing on the edge of the pond. That'd be kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
Two warships, a lot of firebombs and such.
Indeed.
Lots of fun. How do you get to the Colosseum, Matt?
Those who have distinguished themselves in the ways of violence might find themselves invited.
I love this turn of phrase, by the way, and I'm sorry to interrupt. Those who distinguished themselves in ways of violence, that just means they fucked up a lot of stuff.
Right. Well, because I don't want to say, you know, fine warriors, because
they might be murderers.
Well, not just that, but wizards aren't warriors, but they are absolutely proficient in violence.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so. The druid may not be a great warrior, but when they shapeshift into an owlbear and bite off your face, that's certainly distinguishing themselves in terms of combat.
Exactly.
Good sir, you bit off his face. How distinguished you are in the terms of combat. Let me adjust my bow tie for a bit and grab you a cigar. Yeah, cool. Continue.
So you might get invited, or you might just get plucked out of wherever you are and dropped into the Colosseum.
So I've bit somebody's face off and wind up in this jungle environment?
Yeah, like Malar just happened to be watching at the time you did that, and they're like, I approve.
This guy. His face biting is spectacular. Let's throw him in the Colosseum and see what happens.
Exactly.
Delightful. What kind of inhabitants do we have in the Colosseum?
The Colosseum is inhabited by gods of war and competition from across the multiverse. They kind of convene here for their own amusements, and also they use it as a place to discuss boundaries, like where each person fits in the multiversal hierarchy of things.
And I would assume other creatures of combat would also reside in the Colosseum.
Absolutely. You also have spectators, and spectators could be anybody if they can figure out their way in.
Maybe they get invited by a golden ticket of some sort?
Could be.
Down in their chocolate bar?
Sure.
Do you want to go to a bloody feud? Maybe they're at a cockfight or something like that, or a monster fight?
What I honestly see is like some wizened old man selling warm beer and bad hot dogs roaming through like Colosseums out in the real world. And they just swing by, and anybody who's betting heavily, they're just like, you know.
Hey, kid, you want to see a real show?
Exactly.
You take the ticket and all of a sudden you're in a different Colosseum.
Yep.
I'm going, how the hell do I get back?
Details.
All right. So you're there.
Mm-hmm.
What do you got in the Colosseum? Because it's morphic, divinely morphic. So do you have any specific locations or anything like that?
Basically, you're either in the stands, in the arena, in an honored box seat, or in the wings, waiting for a fight.
Yeah, the face-biting wings.
Exactly.
How do you get out, speaking of which? What happens when you're, like, is there any combat rules or anything like that?
It is. It's a little interesting. Basically, you fight until you lose. You're magically rested between fights, and you gain rewards for each fight you win. When you lose, you are healed and then returned from whence you came with no further discussion or interaction.
You're useless to me now. You've lost. Get the fuck out.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, I'm cool with that. You've bitten off the last face. You just couldn't do it this time.
Yeah, you just...
It's too many faces. You know, I've done enough.
Full.
I got full. That's right. My belly is full. I can't bite any more faces off. Back to the wild.
All right. So the rewards that you get for these fights, they might be monetary or magical. It might be informational. Basically, whatever the deities of the war deem appropriate. The more bouts you win, the larger and more varied your rewards. Competition gets progressively harder.
Yeah, it should be.
And hubris will be met with escalation.
So if you go up there and say, I'm the greatest warrior that has ever been seen in the multiverse, you're about to fight a dragon.
Oh, or, you know, if you get real mouthy, one of the gods of war might just hop into the ring and be like,
that's all you got? And he, all right, you want a ball today? Let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's just roll. I love this. This would be a great one-shot demiplane.
Absolutely. I would allow for like a certain level of arrogance. It's when you get too far.
You get mouthy.
Yeah.
You start to be done.
You get disrespectful.
You can't be disrespecting the gods of war, man. They backhand you. Feed you to some bear that bites off your face.
Exactly.
I don't know what I have about biting off of faces tonight. It is what it is.
But yeah, that's the Colosseum.
Cool.
Up next, though.
Something vastly different than the Colosseum.
Indeed.
This is coming directly from my brain.
Yeah. We have a demiplane called the Fishbowl.
Yeah. Yeah. The name's on the tin there, buddy.
All right. Hit me with the description, my guy.
Upon entering the demiplane, visitors find themselves in a dry, air-enclosed castle of amazing size. Think city size.
Okay.
Except it's made of plastic.
Sure.
The castle is large and composed of many different districts. Venturing to the edge of the castle, they see ocean for miles around, very similar to the plane of water in this respect. and a strange shimmering light coming from high above, like it's the surface.
Sure.
In the distance, the largest goldfish anyone has ever seen can be viewed swimming calmly through the depths next to a mountainous bubbling clam.
Fantastic. What are the characteristics of this place?
Well, it is a finite domain, 200 miles large.
Oh, all right.
It's just big.
Yeah.
Big-ass bowl. Alterable morphic, normal gravity, water dominant, because it's obviously a fishbowl, normal time and magic. As suggested by the name, the fishbowl is in fact a 200-mile-wide giant fishbowl.
So, just to be clear, this is a fishbowl.
It is a fishbowl.
It is a 200-mile-wide giant fishbowl.
Yes. Okay. But it could be any fishbowl, and I'll talk about that in a second. Should the visitors wish, they can reach to the edge of the plane, where blurred backgrounds suggest the entire demiplane is inside yet another demiplane of some sort, like a room.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get to the edge of the glass, you're looking. You can't really see what's in the room, but you know it's some sort of room.
Sure.
Swimming up reaches the surface, but so far no one has been able to break the surface tension.
Sure.
Scholars suggest the room varies from time to time and may suggest the fishbowl is actually a demiplane to any fishbowl which exists in reality.
How do you get to the fishbowl?
Several portals exist within the elemental plane of water, as well as open oceans, lakes, rivers, and pet stores. Easy to get to in a pet store.
Yeah, man. What's the portal key?
The portal key is a pouch composed of fish flakes and brine shrimp.
Oh.
Sea monkeys.
Sure.
Leaving is a somewhat dangerous experience. You must be swallowed by the titanic goldfish Lucky, his name is Lucky, and survive digestion. Somewhere within its gullet contains the portal back to the plane of water.
All right.
And only to the plane of water.
Yeah, I caught that.
Which means you may have come from a pet store or some other plane, right? River.
Sure.
On the prime. You're going to end up in the plane of water regardless. So you're kind of screwed if you can't
breathe. Suboptimal.
Can't breathe underwater. You're kind of out of luck.
Well, if you swam the freaking 60 miles to get to the goldfish, the giant.
You should be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are there any other inhabitants besides the giant goldfish?
There are lots, in fact.
Okay.
Any aquatic creature can wind up in the fishbowl, so Selhagen, Kuotoa, Merfolk, Tritons, Sea Elves, Aquatic Horrors, regular fish, sharks, and all sorts of things can make their home here. Tailor it according to your campaign and amusement.
Sure.
Additionally, planar travelers often venture to scour the plane for loot strewn amongst the fish poop, because not everyone makes it out of the fish innards.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
They're eventually digested, and all of their magical gear strewn about the land. Circling the plane at random patterns is the great fish Lucky, who is said to be the pet of a god who survived a great flushing.
Absolutely.
He got flushed down the toilet and survived.
We've got a big castle. Are there any other locations there?
We have the giant sea castle, as I mentioned, the city of shrimp, a clam of damnation, the land of the bubbling sea chest, plastic kelp forests, and of course, the great filter, which destroys all matter once entered.
Okay.
You don't want to enter. You don't want to go to the great filter. Mm-mm.
So that's the fishbowl.
Yep. Now, you said you had an alternate example of the fishbowl where it came from?
Yeah. So my theory is, what if Xanathar, the beholder, founded the demiplane for his goldfish?
That would be great. So the goldfish is Xanathar's?
Yeah. It's Xanathar's goldfish.
It just got really big?
Yeah.
I love that idea. I'm down with that. And that'd be very interesting as well. Yeah, tailor it to whatever you want.
Sure. We have one last.
We've saved the best for last, I feel. More specifically, we've saved the worst for last.
We've certainly saved the oddest for last.
Yes.
Tell me about the Disco Inferno.
Disco Inferno. Product of a truly foul mind, the Disco Inferno is a large dance club which damns all who enter to a fiery death. Hey, look, we've talked about some really awesome demiplanes. Let's have one that's just nasty.
All right.
Gilded gold and tacky paintings made from special asbestos inks and brass line the walls. Sizzling beverages can be seen in the fiendish patron's hands. Gaudy clothing, tracksuits, and other vile creations adorn the partygoers, and everywhere creatures cavort, thrust pelvises, pivot and slide to pounding bass lines. Above it all, a titanic disco ball shines hellish visions upon the dancers, blurring the moving bodies and somehow highlighting various charred corpses which are strewn about the room. It's a dance hall.
Yeah.
Of fiends.
Sure. It's the devil's dance floor.
It is, in fact, the devil's dance floor. Indeed, speaking of the heat, you yourself feel the touch of hell upon this toxic club. Upon entering, individuals immediately begin to take 1 point of fire damage each round, which can only be offset by participation in the Disco Inferno.
Okay.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
What are the characteristics of this place, man?
Well, it's a disco club, so it's finite.
Sure.
Again, it's a demiplane. Alterable-morphic, normal gravity. It is fire dominant, and it is timeless because disco's eternal, man. I love it. Any magic that allows for fire resistance or immunity is impeded.
Okay.
So you roll in as a fire elemental, you're going to take some fire damage. Unless you survive.
They're naturally resistant, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, well, yeah. You know what? If you have natural immunity or resistance, I'll allow that. But if you're like casting a spell or something like that, automatically gone. In order to survive, one must dance. The act of dancing immediately gives the user fire immunity and lasts for twice the amount of time spent dancing. So dance for 30 minutes, you're immune for an hour.
Oh, okay.
So you got a little bit of respite, but I mean, you got to think about that. That means you're dancing for several hours.
Sure.
To rest for several hours. Yeah. So you will take some constitution checks.
Do you have to dance for 4 to be able to get a long rest?
Yes, which I love. Additionally, one may seek refuge at the bar by sitting at a bar stool. This gives you immunity by sitting, only by sitting at the bar. But as it only serves 60 seats and it is always busy, one must fight through thick crowds to survive. And I might add, this is populated by fiends.
Right.
So you got to fight fiends to get to the bar.
Sure.
And then you got to be served a drink, which is also tough to do. A final option, which is readily accepted, is to sell one's soul to a residing fiend in exchange for survival. This damns the creature and does not mean the individual will necessarily escape or survive anything but the heat from the demiplane.
Sure.
And because, think about it, I've just sold my soul to a devil.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm resistant to heat and it guts me.
Sure.
This is a damning place.
Yep.
But I mean, if you can, you know, make it away from the fiends in time.
Sure.
Maybe you can survive.
So, how do you get there?
Any poor soul can be cursed to Disco Inferno by a greater fiend. That's the first way. They curse you, maybe with their dying breath, and you get teleported away to Disco Inferno. Additionally, portals can be found in various seedy bars located in Avernus and the city of Dis. They say Dispiter has a personal portal.
Mm.
He likes to dance. The portal key required is to hum out of tune.
Sure. Because it's disco.
Yeah, I'm just amused by all of this. Getting out involves facing a dance-off with another resident of the Disco Inferno.
Oh.
That's the only way to leave. You have to do a dance-off. Should the user win, they are allowed a portal key with the portal found in the men's room. But note, fiends don't like to lose. So you better win and then get the hell out, literally.
What are the inhabitants of this place?
Any manner of creatures resistant or immune to fire could end up in the Disco Inferno. So fire elementals, fiends of all sorts, Afridi, salamanders, they can all make their home in the Disco Inferno. And I might add, for a mental picture, a salamander in a lounge suit.
Mm.
Yeah. That's
yeah.
A choice, right? Gold lounge suit is doing this little thing going on.
And slithering his way down the dance line.
Oh, yeah. He's a lounge lizard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's great. He's got a drink in his hand, a little martini. It's bubbling because it's so hot. It's great. Other residents may include cursed planar travelers, which is probably the second common.
Sure.
Professional dancers and record producers who all sold their souls long time ago, so they're immune to the heat.
Right. What are the locations?
You've got a DJ booth. You've got the damning coat check, lounge bar, the bathrooms, of course. There's backstage if you can manage to get back there, and the manager's office, and of course, the disco.
Sure.
Come on, you know you'd love it. Disco's forever, bro.
No.
No.
I despise disco.
It's not. So there you have it. 6 delightful demiplanes that you can toss into your campaign for your players.
And, you know, have fun with it.
We certainly have had a lot of fun creating these.
Absolutely.
Questions or comments, hit us up at Goblin's Corner, or of course you can ask us in the comments below in YouTube.
Do you like the show?
We hope you do. Subscribe to the podcast on your favorite player, YouTube, and Twitch.
If you could do us a favor and click the 5 stars, give us a review on iTunes, Podchaser, and on YouTube, like, subscribe, click the notification bell, comment, do all of the wonderful things that help put us in front of new people and feed the hungry algorithm.
Hungry algorithm's a salamander with a lounge suit, bubbling martini, just kind of slithering up next to you. Yeah, he wants to do a little duo dance. That's a good algorithm right there. It's got some fast moves.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's all the time we have for tonight. Once again, my name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
We'll see you next time.
Good night, folks.
The Goblin's Corner is written and produced by Eric Holden and Matt Staples.
The music is by the Mighty D20.
This has been a Subterranean production.